And welcome to minute 72 of season 10 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is the birthday boy, Alan Sanders. Happy birthday on November 18th to you.
Thank you.
You're 36, right?
I am 39.
39. Oh, damn, I got it wrong. All right. I was close. Wait, is that 39? How many stacks is that? Is that 24 stacks and 48 stacks putting together?
Yeah,
for 72 stacks really, and bills, right?
I haven't really counted, but I'll tell you, I'll be honest. I'm 50, officially 55 now. I don't think of my age. I never have. I'm a big fan of the Indiana Jones or the Raiders of the Lost Ark line. It's not the years, it's the mileage.
That's right.
And so it doesn't matter how many years you have. It's how are you taking care of this particular vehicle that you get to drive around life in? And I take a extraordinary amount of care about what I eat and what I do. Because I want to stay as fit and healthy and fun as I can for as long as possible. I don't want to be that person who's, you know, needs a scooter to go to the grocery store and has to sit in an easy chair from the time I get out of the bed to the time I go back to bed. I got too much I want to do, see, and experience. So my wife and I made the decision a while ago. We said, you know what, no sweets except for like special occasions, no sugar if we can help it. We plan our own food for a lot of what we eat. We've learned a lot of techniques to just be as healthy as possible. And I just had my most recent blood screening with where I work. We have to do a health coach thing. And we've charted the last 3 years that we were doing this, quote, health coach, trying to keep you on the straight and narrow. And if you think about your risk categories of being low, moderate, or high, like a high risk for heart attack or a high risk for diabetes or a high, you got those. I was at the top end, but of the low risk category 3 years ago.
Oh, wow.
We started doing our own bread, started making our own food, started doing getting rid of the sugar. In 3 years, I am now dropped to the very bottom. Like, I am as low as you can get in the low-risk category across cholesterol, across my sugar levels, across my body BMI, my body mass index.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. I'm like, all I did was I stopped eating processed food at the store and stopped eating store-bought bread.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah. That's great.
I mean, I'm still active. We've always been active. We like, you know, my wife's a personal trainer. We've got a homestead. We do a lot of outdoor work. We're in the sun a lot, which, by the way, is really important to get outside and do things.
Vitamin D
and eating good, eating good food. And you know what? Everybody take. I know it's a segue here. I run into people who are like, I can't afford to go buy whole food. I mean, it's just cheaper. I'm like, how much are you spending on your medications? How much are you spending at the doctor? You know, wouldn't you rather transfer that money and buy better food and not have to go to the doctor because you're healthier? So anyway, that's how I look at it.
Makes sense. Well, as they say, long life, you know, yes. May you have many, many happy returns and many more happy birthdays coming to you
Thank
along
you.
The way.
Thank you.
Yes.
By the way, I shared today with Mickey Mouse. So we got to do a shout out to Mickey Mouse, because I mean, that's the one thing I can say. You may not remember my birthday on November 18, but if you remember Mickey Mouse's birthday, you'll never forget mine.
There you go. All right. Well, we'll get in touch with Walt on that one.
Okay.
Exactly. All right. So minute 72 begins with Gray continuing to load up the money. And ends with Garber relaying the new demands to Daniels. So we ended things yesterday with Blue starting to give some new demands of what he wants them to do. You know, he basically told them at this point that he wants them to turn the power back on and give them green lights all the way down to all the way down to the waterfront. And mm-hmm. I actually find it really funny that, you know, this is episode 72, and yesterday we were just talking about the fact that there were 72 stacks of money. So, you know, that fits in really well. I don't think they planned that, that they would be stacking the 72 stacks of money in the 72nd minute of the movie. Ha-ha to
Nope,
them.
not a nice happy accident.
Exactly. So basically, Blue continues telling his new instructions, and first we see that Gray and Brown are still putting money into their various pockets, which I think is really clever also, that they have enough layers and pockets for each of them to put in 18 stacks of money. Again, it shows the meticulous nature of the way that they are, this whole thing is put together. So I just think it's really
Yeah,
cool.
I was struck by two things when I watched it. First, it almost annoyed me because they kept showing it lasted a lot longer than I think a modern film would about showing them stacking their money in their pockets, internal pockets, vest pocket, then lower pockets. But when you pull back and say they knew exactly what they needed to carry it on them in a way where they could zip up, and if they were walking on the street, you would never know.
That's right. Especially since we know that this is like late fall, so it's a little chilly. So it makes sense that people are going to be, walking around with these hats and the overcoats and all that stuff. So it definitely fits in really well. But again, you say that they spend a little bit too much time showing them put the money in, but things are going on around them as they're doing that. Blue is
No,
talking as we see that they're doing this.
I
So.
agree. They show the scenes of them, these two guys stuffing, and then later they show the other ones, like they made a point of showing everybody stuffing money into their pockets and then zipping up.
But maybe that's for us to see later on for the fact that they start rifling through the dead men's pockets so that we know that okay there's money there. That it is split evenly between all of them or whatever it is. So Blue continues with his instructions and he goes, "You will also remove all police personnel from the tunnel. If I see a single policeman between here and South Ferry, I'll shoot another hostage. In fact, any deviation, I'll shoot another hostage." So again, he's threatening. Do you think he really means it at this point, or based on the fact that this is all pretty much a ploy, he's just threatening?
Well, this goes back to our conversation yesterday. I don't think he wants to, but he's saying it repeatedly, and we've already known that we know he's already done one. I think he's just reminding him, I've done it before, I'll do it again. And if you in any way think that because I'm getting a little bit of what I want, that I will soften on that stance, I am not softening. So it's a bit, I think, performative, but I also think that if push came to shove, he would do it again.
Okay. Again, we all know that he did kill Bud in completely in cold blood. No question about that. So, but again, I think that these are he's just making these threats, and but he doesn't expect to have to follow through with them because again, as we're going to see shortly, he's going to move the train and he tells him, no, don't worry. If I see anyone, you'll be fine. That type of thing, because this is, I'm trying to get away out of sight from you, that type of thing. But and then, Garber responds to him and goes, "Listen, fella, I hope you take this in the right spirit. But after this is over, you should seek psychiatric help." Which is a great line.
You know, the other thing I was struck by this movie versus and obviously I think the as a culture and as society evolves and changes over the decades, the idea, the number of times the people on the quote the good guy side, whether it was the police, whether it's the leader of the transit authority, they're very flippant with people who are threatening to kill people, which I don't think would happen today, or at least not to the degree that they are acting this way. So I thought that was also an interesting difference on how police procedures have evolved in the last 60 plus years.
Exactly. I agree with you. I mean, again, going back to the borough commander, when he misunderstands that that the commissioner says that we're going to go in, that they got the go, and he's like, "Okay, my men are ready to go," and take out the terrorists. No, we got permission to pay. I definitely agree with you. Now he says, "I hope you take this in the right spirit." Do you have any idea what that phrase means? What's the right spirit?
I don't know the derivation, but my impression has always been, if you could take what I'm about to say in a positive or a negative way, I mean it the positive.
Okay. Okay. So, I mean, the phrase itself actually originates from the Bible. It was it's in the Old Testament in Psalms, chapter 51, verse 10. And the verse is, create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. And this is, you know, Psalms was written by King David, and he was expressing his deep repentance and desire for moral and spiritual alignment with God's will after committing adultery and murder. So basically, the phrase means, you know, moral integrity, that someone possesses an inner quality that is upright and just, alignment with divine principles, having a mindset, attitude, and intentions that are in harmony with God or the universe's standards, a steadfast and willing heart, signifying firmness of purpose and resolution to follow a righteous path rather than being inconstant or easily swayed by temptation. And basically, nowadays, it's known as a general expression used to describe a sincere, humble, or positive attitude or mindset when approaching a situation or relationship. So that's more or less the way that it fits in here. You know, he's basically saying, take this the right way. You know, don't get upset about the way that I'm saying this. I'm very sincere about what I say. I think you really, you need psychiatric help.
Yeah. And I will say that not with those words, but I'll say that to people, especially in my business of talk radio. I'll say, if there's two ways you're hearing me say this, and one is negative and one is positive, I mean it in the positive way. So please understand, I get that everybody maybe hears words differently, or maybe they hear context. But if you think I'm slamming you, I'm not. I'm trying to say, of the two options, there's a better way to do this. So I'm giving you the spirit, as you said. I'm coming from a good place, even though you might take it negative.
Right. Don't take it negative. Don't think this is the wrong way. But, you know, you should see, you need to get help.
You need help.
Yes. And, you know, we get a little bit of a smirk from Blue, but it's a very slight smirk, the way that he responds to it. And he goes, well, let me know when all my points have been complied with. Over and out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's very to the point. You know, he doesn't dawdle. And again, you know, ever since you've mentioned the fact that he reminds you of Hans Gruber, it really does fit in here. Because I can see Hans Gruber doing something very similar.
This whole time, and I know it's one of those weird things where it's backwards, because all I have is Hans Gruber in my head while watching a film that came out well before Die Hard.
Only I
couldn't help
years.
Drawing that comparison. Okay. Oh, but still, it's which I love. Younger people have a harder time doing this. You and I are both fans of film. What I love is when I go back and I find an older film and I'm like, oh, I bet that kind of a performance helped inform the one that I'm more familiar with. Or right. I wonder if the actor was familiar with that film, or was this sort of the inspiration to do, like we mentioned Quentin Tarantino, did he choose to name his characters after colors because of this film? You know, it's nice to be able to go, is this where it started?
Right. Well, we actually know that is true. So yeah.
with Quentin Tarantino. Yeah. But far as
Tarantino,
we don't know. I don't think we know for a fact if Alan Rickman based his character off.
This was the first time that anyone has brought that up, and I like it. I think it works. Yeah, so
I couldn't help it. I'm telling you the whole time, and maybe it's that whole stereotypical, well, it's a British speaking bad guy, but the mannerisms and the cat and mouse game and giving demands and chasing, having the authorities focused on what you think, that like the one thing everybody thinks that you're focused on, you know, it's the same kind of storyline almost with Die Hard, where Hans Gruber's wanting them distracted, wanting them chasing their tails, wanting to give, you know, I don't know who these people are. I just read about it in Forbes magazine, right? You know, it feels very similar.
Yeah. It makes sense. It makes sense. I like the way that they do that. And then Garber gets up and he walks to a different station. And once again, you know, we see the clock in the background, perfectly in tune, because it shows us that it is 3:25, 3:26, something like that. And then we hear him say, "Rico, are you there?" And then we're back with Jerry Stiller. We get to see you know, he goes, "Rico." He goes, "I'm here. Z, what's up?" He goes, "Hold on while I cut in the city cops."
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets up and walks back across the room. And then he goes, "Frank, hook me up and get out of there." And Frank goes, "What a way to run a railroad." You know, we're going to have some good Frank lines this week, with the way that you know, Frank gets his shots in here and there. And then Garber starts talking to Inspector Daniels again, and he goes, "Inspector Daniels, come in. This is Garber." And then we're back to seeing Daniels, and he goes, "This is Daniels. Oh, Inspector, I have Lieutenant Patron on the transit police on the line. I have the latest instructions from the hijackers. They want power restored, all tracks cleared, signals green to South Ferry, and no cops anywhere." So, first of all, I like the way that he succinctly just explains everything that Blue has said over the last minute and a half, you know, by giving his instructions. You know, mm-hmm. Garber doesn't need to take time to try and explain all these different things. It's just bullet points, I guess you could say, with the way that he's giving the information. So, yeah, I like that. I like the way that he's finally hooking them up together, because up until now, he's been the go-between between them. You know, speaking to one and then speaking to the other and whatever. So, but it makes you wonder how he actually hooked them up and why he didn't do it beforehand from that perspective. So
now, I know this is a bit of a segue, and you may have already talked about it, but having never watched this film before, when we were on Inspector Daniels the first time, I'm like, this guy looks so familiar. What do I know him in? And it wasn't until maybe a few minutes later when I had a chance to see his mannerisms and his facial expression, I'm like, oh my God, he's the steel one-armed, like a steel-armed man from Live and Let Die.
That's right.
What's his name? It's Julius Harris? Is it Julius Harris?
Yeah.
And yeah. So I was like, I knew I recognized this guy, but it was one of those things where I'm like, oh my God, who is this? Who is this? I know this guy, but he's dressed like a cop. He's playing a good guy. And I'm like, wait a minute. What? And I was like, oh my God, that's Live and Let Die.
That's right. And again, this was just a year later. So, you know, it's, you know, everyone was probably familiar with him as Teehee, you know, from just the previous year. And here he's now a good guy as opposed to being a bad guy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yes,
I love when I go back and catch an older movie and then recognize an actor that I know from something completely different in it. And it's just, I don't know, it's always done that. Even since I was a kid, I was always, for some reason as a kid, like for example, Harrison Ford, I knew him as Han Solo. So every movie he's Han Solo, right? Because as a kid, you don't think that's just a character. You think that's who he is. And then you go see him in something like, wait a minute, that wasn't very cool of Han Solo to act that way. Like, well, cause he's not Han Solo, dummy.
Exactly. I love the theory, and I don't know if it's from the Indiana Jones Minute guys or not, that basically the whole idea of Indiana Jones is a dream that Han Solo is having while he's in Carbonite.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that before. Yeah, that it's a fever dream.
That's right. Which it would be pretty funny if that actually – well, if that really was true. But we will never know that either. It's one of those theories.
No, but it makes for a very fun theory.
Yes. Completely. I like the fun theories. Garber is succinctly giving the information over to both Daniels and Rico at the same time. This minute ends. So is there anything else you wanted to talk about on this minute?
No, not really. I mean, it's just a continuation of what we had yesterday. I will tell you, when I watched it, I kept trying to, and I'm glad they reiterated a couple times about the red light, green light, because that comes up in later dialogue about why that's so important. So I'm glad they reinforced it here, because I had no idea what that meant. I wasn't an ardent subway rider. We only rode one once, and I wasn't paying attention to lights in the subway. And I will tell you the one thing I love about the movie, and I don't know how much is 100% accurate, but it felt like the detail about how subways work, about tracking them, about the dead man switch, about these, all of that felt like there was such a good amount of research, but at the same time, they don't hit you over the head with it. You just feel like these guys thought this through, and you knew right away one of the people had to have had a long history with being a subway operator, which of course is part of the subplot. But I love that. I love learning about, at least at that era, the techniques that they had for safety, for security, to make sure that if a train did run away, how do you stop it automatically? I mean, that I thought was pretty cool. And so that all kind of ties into the dialogue here as well, about wanting all these green lights all the way down to the South Ferry.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Again, you don't know at that point that it's all a ploy, but right. it still works really well by the way that they do that.
Mm-hmm. And I like a movie that does that, where it's, and again, all the good heist hijacking films, because you'll have people in the audience who are like, well, wait a minute, what about this? And what about that? And you get a sense that the screenplay, at least the authors of the screenplay, put a lot of thought into making sure that they had a lot of these questions answered to keep it gripping, because if you lose the audience, then you lose the thriller aspect of a hijack. You want to keep them going, how are they getting out of this? What are they thinking of? You know, what's next? What's next? And you got to keep them in. And so I liked the writing a lot for that perspective.
Right. Yeah. Because again, they just do a great job of keeping things moving and keeping us guessing throughout the entire time as to what is really going on here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So, yeah. Yeah, I like that too. All right. So, every Tuesday, we have a segment called Tuesday Blues Day, where my guests will give their top five Robert Shaw performances. So, once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way down?
All right. Now, this was a little bit easier. I have seen many more films with Robert Shaw. It was a little more difficult to try to rank them because he's good in everything. But I went with number five, the character of Red Grant from Russia with Love. Number four, where it's not a title role, well, he's not a main character, but he brought the character to such life as a secondary part, yet it's all about King Henry VIII, but it's him playing King Henry VIII in A Man for All Seasons. I thought he did a phenomenal job bringing that part to life, even though he wasn't the central part of the story. It was obviously about Thomas Becket, but his characterization of Henry VIII was amazing.
Yeah.
I think you'll be very happy to know that in my top, once again, in my top five, I go number three, Mr. Blue, The Taking of Pelham 123. I was very, very happy watching this performance. I was captivated the whole time. Maybe in prejudice, I'm a Robert Shaw fan from the other films that I've seen. But having never seen this, I was like, the minute I was watching his performance, I was like, this guy is really good. He's a really good bad guy for this.
Great.
All right. Number two, a film I remember watching with my dad almost every time either Veterans Day came around or Memorial Day or anytime they were playing war movies. One of my dad's favorite war movies was about the big push of the Allies through Europe and the big winter storm of 44 and Hitler trying to do his last push to try to retake all this ground. But the Battle of the Bulge, and to have him play Colonel Hessler on the German side, I thought brought an intelligence and a gravitas to a character that you know you're not supposed to like.
Right. Yeah, that's always tricky to be able to do that. But
And of course, if anybody knows me and as long as I've been talking about movies, my number one favorite Robert Shaw performance, I'm assuming you could guess, but the character
Golden Voyage of Sinbad, right?
Yeah, no. Quint in the movie Jaws.
Yes, I knew that.
In fact, when we have these conversations in radio, I would argue that the monologue of the USS Indianapolis that Robert Shaw delivers, which took 2 nights to film. The first time he was drunk off his ass. The second time he was totally sober. And you can go back and play the game. Watch for his eyes looking really glassy when they're really glassy. That was the first night. When they're not as glassy, that was the second. But it is maybe the one of, if not the finest monologue I think ever captured on film. It is gripping. It is 4.5 straight minutes of nothing but dialogue, and you cannot take your eyes or your mind off of every second of what he's saying. And it is a phenomenal piece of film.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that one. Have you seen the recent documentary Jaws at 50?
Yes, I have. Okay. I loved it.
Right, because they talk about that there also. That whole thing. All right, excellent. That is a great top five. Thank you very much for that. We will now play the daily game of Name That Remake. So we will spin the wheel and see what remake Alan will get this time. So let's spin the wheel, and around we go. Let's see where it's going to land.
You always make me nervous, dude.
Why does it make you nervous? There's no reason why it should make you nervous.
Well, because I don't want to look dumb. Well, too late.
Yeah, we could have said that a long time ago. Okay, so the original movie came out in 1978, and the remake came out in 2004. And it's about a group of people trapped in a mall during a epidemic.
Oh, that would be Dawn of the Dead.
Correct. Yeah, that one's a difficult one to try to explain without having to use the word zombies.
Right. No, but you want to talk about a film that just shaped me as a teenager? George Romero's Dawn of the Dead. I watched that 50, 60, 70 times probably as a teenager. I loved that movie.
Yeah, and I like it better than the original. I think it's much better.
You mean the original, like Night of the Living Dead?
Yeah.
Yeah. The prequel. Yeah, well, the movie that kind of set up the premise.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. But
because I was going to say the remake, which then it is the original. I like the original Dawn of the Dead versus the remake Dawn of the Dead.
I liked them both. I this is actually one of the few remakes on this list. I mean, obviously we've discussed 72 different remakes so far, but this is one of the few that I think is that the remake is still quite good. You know, it changes things slightly and still stays enjoyable to watch. You know, it's not one of the remakes that I'm like, oh my god, I can't believe they remade this movie. You know,
the one thing that I added a difference that I did like, because you have to ask yourself, if it's a reanimated body, why does it have to move like it's, you know, a snail's pace? And the fear of thinking about a horde of zombies coming at you at actual full speed is pretty terrifying, rather than just that mindless mob just kind of wandering, you know, as we often associate with zombie movies.
Correct. I agree with you on that one.
And you know what? We've got two people behind the scenes that made kind of like their fortunes from it. Zack Snyder directed, but it was written by James Gunn. So
exactly. The two of them showed that they have a little bit of a future in this town. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Slightly.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. So, Alan, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Alan Sanders when he's not going and celebrating his birthday later today?
I do a daily news talk show, generally dealing with news and politics, U.S. Politics at the national level. I don't dive into states and certainly not local. It's more about national. But you can find the Alan Sanders Show. Just key it in anywhere you find great podcasts. But I'm also on Facebook, X, Instagram, Getter, Truth Social, and YouTube.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can send me an email at movierobminute@movierob.net. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. And you can find me on Facebook. So Alan, have a great rest of your birthday. And
thank you.
We will both be back tomorrow. But until then, achoo.
Gesundheit.